Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings, welcome in. It's the second half. Disco ball is down, still twirling about. The band has left the field. There's no playing as they walk off. Mike Harmon alongside LeVar Arrington, the All-American, All-Mammal team, all of those things. WarriorWoke.com, at King of the Mammals on Instagram, where you find him.
Very nice.
My guy, FS1, speak for yourself. He's getting lean and mean. Like he's getting ready to run through a wall. It's like going back to the playing days here.
I definitely feel like I can run through a wall right now.
The road to Swole is real.
Yeah, it is.
We're ready for the NBA Finals, buddy. We're here in Los Angeles, and the excitement is palpable. It's been a pretty crazy week. We've still got people taking their shots, or at least acknowledging the fact that the LA Clippers fired Doc Rivers. More long-form stories flowing out of that. Magic Johnson, you know, we celebrate when Magic tweets, quote, "I can't believe the LA Clippers fired Doc Rivers and basically blamed him for getting bounced out of the playoffs by the Denver Nuggets." Now, when they were eliminated, he took great pleasure saying same old Clippers. So You didn't help Magic. You didn't. But part of the reason Doc gets fired 7 years in and down the corridor there at Staples, well, the Lakers are still playing basketball. Right. Let's call it what it is. You brought in the big guns thinking you were going to get over. You were going to take advantage of this downtime for the Lakers. You had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. That didn't work. You rebuilt it bigger, faster, stronger. You bring in Kawhi. You bring in Paul George.
That didn't work.
And you thought it was going to work. You had multiple sixth men of the year. I mean, they were lining up. Lou Williams disappeared.
You thought you knew who were the... Wait.
You going Denny
You
Green?
Thought you knew who they were.
Yeah, you were going Denny.
You want to crown them? Crown them.
And that's what we're looking to see. Oh, there it is.
How are you going to try to make a sound bite and you mess it up? I thought they were.
All right. One.
I blanked out on it. Yep. I'm not going to try it.
You want me to get that squirrel running back on the treadmill there? What? Anyway, the point is, Doc Rivers is out.
I had my moments Rivers and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and, well, basically all of the L.A. Clippers. I just had an L.A. Clipper moment.
That's it.
I was supposed to deliver, and I didn't.
Nicely done.
There
that
you
is
go.
Well played. But they were eliminated. Doc Rivers is out. So
that's kind of crazy, though. In a pandemic season, you mutually agree to move on from one another,
well,
which we all know.
There's no mutual about that.
We
Come
all
on.
Know that it's not mutual, even though it's mutual.
It's time for you to go. Yeah.
It's mutual so that you can go get another job because we don't have to say we fired you.
Well, you still have openings out there and whoever comes in next.
And apparently he must have known that he has a good opportunity to get another gig. I don't know what his contract consist of.
Oh, yeah, they still owe him like $10 million.
Even with that mutually parting ways? Okay. That's what I was about to try to understand.
He's still going to get paid.
Well, there you go.
And it's Steve Ballmer. He's going to shake that out of the cushion in the couch. But
well, I'm sure that something happens if he gets picked up by another team.
No,
right?
Sure. Like, I'm sure there's some of that that comes into play. But, you know, this was the team that was supposed to be built and ready to compete. The streetlights instead of spotlights. And we saw it. I mean, you drive around Los Angeles. You've seen all the billboards. You've seen the ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. And then what's interesting, and you could speak to this from the years in the locker room and, you know, we'll make
I
sure.
I can't speak to being in a winning locker room.
But that's my point. Oh. Neither can they.
Oh. I saw what you did.
So I'm going to keep my hand near that dump button.
That's kind of
no,
messed up.
No, look, it's no disrespect. Winning in college, right? You had success with Joe Pa and company.
We never won it, though.
Didn't win it.
We were never even in contention to win it.
But then we have, with the Clippers, the expectations were huge, right? If you went through media picks before the season, regular season before the bubble, all of these things was they'll get it together. They've got enough talent. They're the deepest team. All of these were the bullet points that roll through. And they're the bullet points that every Lakers fan likes to chime in and laugh about, because when you compared benches on paper, it looked pretty, right? Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, all these guys that could come in and impact a game. For the Lakers, it was, I don't know, Kyle Kuzma. He was supposed to be the chosen one to steal the old Star Wars line. It's either that or unlimited power, but we'll get into that later. But it was the idea that, you know, Avery Bradley opts out. Kyle Kuzma appears and disappears. Danny Green, who's the third guy? Dwight Howard has played like a man possessed, but his emotions sometimes get the better of him. He might get himself bounced from a game before it's all said and done, but he's come to play and turn back the clock at least for a minute. So when you do those apples to apples and you start hearing, hey, there was no chemistry and guys weren't talking and all of these kind of things that are flowing out, you got to have a fall guy, right? It always comes back to that old line of someone's got to pay. You can't fire the whole team. You can fire some administrative guys, I guess, but the coach is usually the guy to fall. And Doc had been there for 7 years. For all the messaging and all the positivity of he kept the guys in the bubble, kept them engaged, right, for the strike. They keep calling it a boycott. No, it was a strike for a couple of days, interrupting the play before they got back onto the court, that he was a guy that people were seeking counsel from. And that's great. But that doesn't help solve whatever issues were going on with the Clippers team. As we saw in the exit interviews, everybody now telling tales out of school. That's where I was trying to go.
When you come up short, and you're supposed to come up the long way, there's going to be answers that have to come from why you weren't able to do it. And that's always going to remain true. You know, for what it's worth, we always have so many different things to say about, you know, these super teams when KG and Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and all those guys, you know, banded together to come to Boston and win a championship, or LeBron going to Miami with Bosh and with D-Wade and all those guys. You just better win. Just win. You know, Rip and all those guys, Tayshaun and all those guys in Detroit, you got to win. If you're going to do the whole super team thing, you know, KD goes to Golden State, you got to win.
Well, that's it, right? And
so
and it's a now business, and especially when you're in year 7.
It's an easy conversation to downplay or diminish when guys go be with one another and they win championships. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have did that. You should have stayed where you were at, da-da-da. But then you realize when you see people come up, teams come up short with that type of firepower from coaching staff on down and they can't complete it, and you start to realize, like, maybe there is still something to it in terms of still being able to put it all together and win. And that's what we saw take place with this Clippers team.
Ready? This is ESPN. Ramona Shelburne on this one. Rivers retraced and analyzed what went wrong with Ballmer. The issues he focused on. His plan for next season involved staffing changes, schematic adjustments, and improved chemistry from another year of playing together. He also believed they needed a true point guard to help organize their offense. For Ballmer, the questions were different. Why was there a lack of leadership? Why was the chemistry lacking? And why were the players so unenthusiastic about playing in the bubble?
I mean, it could have been. Listen, I don't know, you know, what the stories and how the stories unfold about Paul George and all these different things, but be clear, you were in a bubble. You were away from your families. You were being quarantined in a way where your ability to maintain mental and emotional stability within the confines of that bubble, you've got a written advantage over others. But for those who don't, here's why I have a problem with how we're kind of viewing the whole Paul George thing and the Clippers thing in some regards, is Paul George was telling you, I am dealing with some mental health issues being here right now. For some strange reason, it's funny because you always mention my program, Warrior Woke. So let me tell you what Warrior Woke represents. When you're talking about a mindset and an understanding of and your arc of performance, there's an arc of performance. Within the arc of performance, you have inception. Inception is when they went into the bubble. They're there. You're excited about getting back to basketball. Maybe not so much, but you're here. You want to try to make this thing work. You push through it. As time continues on, you find yourself in a place of deception. That's the next phase. Deception. And in that moment of deception, either you are going to find that internal fortitude to be able to mentally and emotionally calibrate with what your physical abilities are in order to continue to get consistent results. That's pushing through the deception phase of your arc of performance. What comes next is your transformation. Within the transformation, now you're thriving. Now I'm like, I got my game going. I feel good about my therapeutic sessions where I'm getting my ice done, where I'm reading books, where I'm talking on FaceTime to my family. I'm motivated. I'm inspired. I'm aspiring to be more than what I am. And then that transitions into the last, which is the hardest place to get to, is identity. And what you saw from LeBron James, what you're seeing from this Lakers team, what you saw in Butler and Hero and those guys in Miami was a transitional stage to identity. And that's going to be a problem for the Lakers to deal with, because these are two identity teams. They have established identity. Paul George told you he could not make it out of the stage of deception. And there might have been other guys on that team that were right there with him in their stage, in their arc of performance. They never made it out. There's two more phases. There's two more stages that come after deception, and they never made it out. You got to be able to address those things.
But that's the coach.
You got to be able to address that.
That's the leader in the locker room, which says, from Ballmer's questions, who's the leader? And how could you not get it done? Because, again, Doc was able to get other guys on board. Hey, this is your mission while you're here, to stay and use your platform and speak as you need to try to help better society. And they stayed and they played. And guys might not have been
pulled
about in.
What about helping and bettering you? What about helping and bettering you? What about your mentor? You know, it's so crazy to me that it's like if Paul George would have said, my elbow on my shooting arm is suffering right now, and I really am feeling off about my elbow, they'd have every type of electrode, the cupping and all kinds of grasping, all that grasping, all these different, I mean, come on, there'd be all kinds of different ways they would try to treat the man. But the man tells you that I'm dealing with some mental health issues here right now based upon being in this bubble for as long as we've been in these regulations and rules. And nobody helped. Everybody's just listening. What do you want to do? You want to talk about it like it's a problem? These guys are dealing with being in this bubble to make this season work so that they can play. And somebody comes out and actually is bold enough and brave enough to say what they're feeling and what they're dealing with. And that is no different than you breaking a limb. It's no different than you stubbing and, you know, spraining a finger or spraining an ankle. But we don't approach it that way. And then you sit there and you see his play dramatically fall off. It dramatically fell off.
One or two blips where he seemed to rectify things for a moment and find a moment of clarity and peace. And then he would go right back into
the shooting.
You
got Lou going to get lemon pepper wings.
Yeah, he
did. In the spot.
They're supposed to be the best wings, though.
He needed to hit that reset button. There were guys in there, and apparently more so with this LA Clippers team, that were dealing with issues that weren't being rectified or being resolved or addressed, and you seeing them acting out. Lou Williams is acting out. Paul George can't perform. The team, those are two of your leaders right there.
Right. So the idea is you got to bring it back together and figure out, does this work, does it not? I always say you go from A to B coach and B to C. Doc's been there for 7 years. You brought in the superstars, and it fizzled out as it does every year. So would you give him another year? What's the definition of insanity, LeVar?
Doing the same things over and over again, thinking you're going to get a different result.
Right? I think that's kind of the point we were hitting.
Well, here's the thing, though. Is it worse for him to lose to the Lakers?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
That's our guy, FS1, Fox Sports. He'll cover some hockey for you as well. Okay. As all things Michigan, it's our man, John Paul Morosi.
Follow him. Michigan.
Well, it is true. Oh. Follow him on Twitter, at John Morosi. You leave out the H, J-O-N, Morosi. Right. Hi, Mom. What's going on, buddy?
Mike and LeVar, a pleasure to be with you. And LeVar, and Mike mentioned it, yes, I do reside in the great state of Michigan, but I always appreciated the way you played against Michigan all those years at Penn State, always respected your game, and I always knew whether it was Anthony Thomas, whoever's carrying the ball, you got to be aware of where LeVar is because you got to run the opposite way as best you can because there was never any room wherever you were in the field, my friend.
Well, that's very kind of you. They always got the best of us, but thank you.
He will chase you down.
Painful memories of Michigan. But,
JP, if only you could see LeVar's face right now. He's reliving some of those moments.
I'm all twitchy just thinking about that. It's all right.
So what I'm going to say is, welcome playoffs 2020.
Yeah.
Very excited about it. I'm banging the drum for it, a 16-team battle royale. And as I mentioned before, the A's, for some reason, sent a left-hander against the White Sox. We have the Yankees with a big offensive explosion, and Bieber got roughed up. Welcome to the playoffs. Here we go.
Well, Mike, it was really a unique day, and I think it's just watching the games unfold. It had that NCAA tournament feel to it, having games all day, and tomorrow's going to be epic. We'll have eight games.
Yeah.
Eight playoff games in one day, starting at noon Eastern, which is just going to be extraordinary to watch that unfold. So I think it's great for the game. Obviously, it's been a challenging year in so many ways, but I think that in these circumstances, it made sense to expand the playoff field to allow for the teams that had interruptions to their schedule or obviously with COVID or just the shortness of the season. It gave some chances to teams to get back into the playoffs in this short look. So I think overall it was a well-conceived plan. We're fortunate that we're here. And some good games today. Obviously, Giolito was really on point for the White Sox. The Yankees, I think their offensive showing against the pitching Triple Crown winner in Bieber tonight was really impressive and just shows how deep that lineup is. And now that they're basically the Yankees are the team we expected them to be when summer camp began and when spring training began. So I think that there are certainly maybe some surprises. The Rays, I thought, looked very good today. But I think overall that maybe the ability of the White Sox to change, as you saw it, Mike, the last week and a half they had played really so terribly.
Timid baseball, too, then to
have a day off and all of a sudden you're on the West Coast for the first time all year. They look great today. So playoff baseball, as you know, is the time of year for the small sample size.
John, I was just asking Mike, if the Stros were to make this run and create this reality of winning it this year, or even coming close, making it to the World Series, how are they viewed? How will we view them? And you know, just give me your perspective on that, because to me, it's like, all right, you can blame winning on something like cheating and it can stick if you don't win anymore. But then it's like kind of like I made the example of the Patriots, but they continued to win. And so it's, you look at it like, well, okay, we caught them doing something they shouldn't have done, but they still beaten everyone. So if the Stros are able to have that type of a off-season run, how are we expected to view this team, this organization?
Well, LeVar, it's a great question because I think that there are a couple things. Number one, the fans that in spring training were booing them through the first week and 2 weeks of games in spring training, I think there was a cathartic experience behind that. To say that, okay, we're going to show this team how upset we are of what's happened in the past with the sign stealing. But then, of course, the season stops. And then we start back up in late July, and there are no fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. So the fans, the Dodger fans, who of course were booing the bus in when Houston came in to play the Dodgers, the chance for baseball fans to sort of roundly get out their frustration about what happened was denied by obviously the fact that fans aren't in the ballpark for a very legitimate reason, which is COVID-19. So I think there's a lot of pent-up frustration that fans were never really able to get out. I think the one counterbalance to that, LeVar, is the fact that they're led by one of the most beloved people in the sport, Dusty Baker. Mm-hmm. And Dusty went in there in obviously very difficult circumstances. Dusty, I believe, is a Hall of Famer. He's the first manager ever now to take five different franchises to the playoffs. And, of course, he won a World Series as a player, but never as a manager. And so there is that sense of how much respect people have for Dusty that I think that might, frankly, take the edge off it a little bit. I also think that there have been some changes to the cast. Of course, they lost Garrett Cole. Verlander's hurt. The position player group is largely the same, but it's not quite the same team because they've lost a lot of their key pitching components. But I do think the lineup looks similar enough, LeVar, that there probably would still be some negativity by fans because I think that this year has been so frustrating in so many different ways that I think that memory of what was going on last offseason and the talk around the Astros, I think, is still very fresh for fans who never really got a chance to let it out in any way at the ballpark this year. Mm-hmm.
JP, obviously here in Los Angeles, everybody's got their Dodger car flags flying, expecting to use them for quite a long while. Where's the biggest danger zone for them to run through the National League?
Well, I think it's left-handed pitching, and the way they might fare against lefties. And it's no accident that Brent Suter, a lefty, is going to start the game tomorrow for Milwaukee. Now, the Brewers, their best pitcher, Corbin Burnes, is out probably for the season. The Brewers do not have the pitching depth, in my view, to keep up with the Dodgers. But we'll know a lot by the quality of the at-bats the Dodgers have tomorrow. And when you think about the Dodgers lineup, if you can control the lefties, so specifically Bellinger, Seager, Muncy, Peterson, of course, if he's in the lineup, he probably won't be against Suter tomorrow. But if you're able to really lock in, and Rios has been very good for them as well this year, if you're able to control the lefties and have success against them and then pitch carefully to Mookie Betts, that's probably your best hope. Now, again, easier said than done, but that's going to have to be the formula, beginning with as many lefty arms as possible for Milwaukee. So I think that was the right move by Craig Counsell to get Suter out there. He could probably give you three innings, maybe four at the high end, just based on how stretched out he is. I think that, to me, is the concern. If there's any concern, it's just how anxious are the at-bats? Does Bellinger bounce back after a pretty mediocre regular season? The pitching, to me, for the Dodgers is as good as I can recall it being for them in this era, because you've got Kershaw and Buehler joined by Gonsolin, joined now by Dustin May. The bullpen has way more weapons than Dave Roberts had a year ago. So they're my pick to win the World Series. They're the most talented team. The only team, in my view, that can beat the Dodgers is the Dodgers. And that's if they don't play up to their normal game.
I hate to say this, but haven't we said this before? Now, I can understand you saying that the pitching is great. Like, listen, I lived in Washington and did local radio for quite some time and got very, very became very fond of the Washington Nationals as our team, obviously. And I can remember just how we spoke of our bullpen and our pitchers and how amazing they were with Zim and Strauss and all those guys. Now, it sounds as though you're sold on this pitching, and that's going to be the difference, but we all know, and listen, I live in L.A. now, so I've experienced the ups and downs of this playoff deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Can you please explain to me what gives you the confidence to feel that they can finally not disappoint the fans that are so crazed about their team?
It's a very good question, and I would still say, LeVar, you can claim some credit for the Nationals' triumph last year.
Okay.
Because you invested there during the painful years.
I was
right?
There. I was there.
You were there for those years.
Yes.
You know, it's a great question. I mean, I look at it and say, the one thing the Nationals did last year. Remember who was one of their biggest heroes? It was Howie Kendrick. Mm-hmm. It was a veteran who was not a superstar. Okay, a respected veteran player who just gave very professional at bats, beloved teammate. The Dodgers have players like that, and now it's important for them to take all the experience like Howie has had in the game, and Ryan Zimmerman and Adam Eaton. The veteran hitters need to put up veteran at-bats. They need to not be swinging out of the zone. I think sometimes you see Bellinger in big games. That's been a problem for him in the past. They've got to. I know it's something of a sports cliche, but it's true. They have to stay within their strike zone and not deviate from their plan. When they are simply within their overall approach and steady there, Justin Turner, who of course has had injuries this year, is a key guy for this as well. As long as they are focused and calm at the plate and not over-eager and swinging outside the zone, they are going to be fine. But again, early in the game tomorrow, I would share that concern, LeVar. And Mike, if you're watching the Dodgers play tomorrow night and the lefty hitters are chasing sliders early against Suter and getting off balance, it's fair to get worried. The Dodgers should sweep the Brewers in two games, period. They should. They're the most talented team in the game. But if you start to see that anxiety become evident in the at-bats, and if they're taking at-bats that are out of character, that's when I think Dodger fans would have reason to worry. And candidly, given all the history, LeVar, as you point out, it's not going to take many innings of scoreless baseball from the Dodger lineup for the Dodger fans to get concerned. We all know that. Mm-hmm. So it's I think it's important for them to maybe get that relaxing number on the board early so they can just play their game. And if they do, they're going to be just fine.
The happiest man in town celebrating the Tampa Bay Lightning and the return of Major League Baseball playoffs. So much to talk about, JP. We'll keep doing it as these playoffs develop. Thanks for giving us some time tonight. Rest up and hydrate. Big day tomorrow.
It is, Mike. And LeVar, a pleasure. And again, I'll always admire all the way you always played back in the day there against the Maize and Blues. So great to be with you on the air.
All right.
Back appreciate you, buddy.
Friend.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Yes. I got a couple of tweets relative to the to the debate. Ready? Okay. These are two good ones. Okay. And they don't pick a side. They just are looking at the event overall.
Okay.
It gave us a great one-liner very early in the show that we'll get to in a minute. But Gil Brandt.
Oh, Gil.
Hall of Famer.
Old head.
Quote, these guys are giving old people a bad name.
Yikes.
The first reply to it, it's just missing Jerry. And then the clown show Trinity would be completed. Mm. Oh, that's just mean. That's horrible. And then this
or
one.
Maybe it was missing Curly.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw a guy in a Three Stooges shirt the other day.
Is that right?
Yeah. Pretty cool. Classic. One of my neighbors. All it was right. Good. Yeah. It used to be a.
Mo was very valiant, man.
Tell you what, man.
Very valiant dude.
If you haven't seen it, or there's a couple of movies
original,
about the
though.
Stooges.
Yeah.
And then there's some books on them.
Yeah.
There's some interesting history there. Okay. But this one comes from Hassan Whiteside. Okay. R.I. brought this to my attention a little bit earlier. Quote, I can't do this for four more years.
Hmm.
Blank America, bro. Ready? Ready?
Uh-oh, here we go.
I'm moving to Hawaii.
Aloha.
Aloha, Mr. Hand.
Just by the way, just for
in
those
in case you didn't know,
for those that may have missed him saying, "I can't take this for another four. I'm moving away from America." Wait for it. Hawaii's American.
There you go.
Hawaii is a part of America, people.
Just so you know. And they also give us great
breaking news at 9:36 on the West Coast time.
We also obviously get
we have just discovered that Hawaii is a part of America, people.
Connect the dots.
You did not escape for the next 4 years by moving to Hawaii, you.
No, and it's expensive.
Messed it up!
And it's expensive as hell, man. Come on. Do your research. Go for a vacation. You okay over there, buddy?
No. He all tweeted right. It.
I know.
You tweeted it.
He eventually deleted it. But as we know in the internet,
it's already been captured.
It lives forever. All right, so the Lakers and the Heat are ready to get it on.
Okay.
All right, Miami's beating the Bucks. They're beating the Celtics. I love the way this – look, Jimmy Butler's one of my favorite players going back to coming into the league with the Bulls.
I love the whole development of his mustachio going on right now.
You got the mustachio.
Turning into like a Zorro dip.
Yeah, I mean, you got that. You got the coffee shop where it's $20 a cup. Genius.
He loves dancing around drinking his coffee while he's going into the locker room.
Right, but showing love to his teammates, yeah. Right? Wearing the Tyler Hero high school jersey.
He had it made.
All of those things.
I love it.
But it's the type of thing, and I always said it with the Bulls, I've said it with Philly and when he was in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He don't want to play with babies. He wants to play with guys that want to play basketball
and they
and
know
are
it.
Willing to commit.
And they know it.
And this team led by Spoelstra, who I don't know that he gets the nod that he deserves.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up because I think that he is the deciding factor. He is the X factor going into this series, is his experience, his understanding of the game, his familiarity with LeBron, and his impeccable ability to game plan in a way where it gets the most out of the players that he has.
You look at the arrival of
not
Duncan
to mention,
Robinson.
Not to mention, you're able to bounce all of this strategy and thoughts off of arguably one of the greatest basketball minds in the history of the game in Pat Riley.
Well, just think about it. All those years ago, if rumors... if we give them their substance and say, all right, this definitely happened. Remember, they wanted Pat Riley to come and coach, and they didn't want Spoelstra on the bench when the not two, not three, not four team was first assembled, right? When that super team happened. Instead, you got a guy who's now in year 12. He's been through the wars. He's seen the best, the worst, and the grind that it takes to get there, and he's got a team willing to do it, mm-hmm. right? You talk about old heads, you bring in Andre Iguodala, six straight finals. Tyler Hero, the man has no conscience. His confidence is off. I wish you could bottle it, right? Because there's not a shot he won't take, a play he won't throw himself into. And these guys throw their bodies around as well, right? They'll grind on the defensive end. And so for that reason, look, Jason picked the Heat before the playoffs started. So because we need some rivalry, I had to make all the arguments for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. But selfishly, it's the Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo kind of love fest and you know, man crush thing going on. Lakers, it's LeBron and AD.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you get out of Dwight Howard? Look, if AD's not going to play at the boards like he did the last couple games in the prior series where we're looking for him to find a rebound in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. that does not bode well for their success against this Heat team.
Mm.
But the length is certainly there.
That
to frustrate
is,
the hell out of him.
Well, that is the defining piece of the puzzle, in my humble estimation, going into this series, is the length has created so many issues for the teams that they're playing against. You know, you're talking about JaVale McGee. You're talking about, obviously, Dwight Howard making his appearance into what's going on. Anthony Davis can take you inside and outside. So not only is he a stretch long man like the big men we just mentioned, but he's able to take you outside of your comfort zone, even though you're supposed to be guarding him as a big. So it has worked in their and oh yeah, LeBron too, by the way.
But that's the thing,
they
right?
are all tall,
but they haven't needed LeBron to go full on score and go turbo LeBron. I always equate him to the Clyde Drexler move, mm-hmm. where he puts his head down,
mm-hmm.
almost like he's running through the B gap trying to pick up a first down, and look, he creates contact, and then that becomes the gamesmanship of, are you going to get the foul calls? Foul call start, you got a problem.
I believe that Udonis Haslam will have to have the best series that he's ever had since being a Miami Heat basketball player for this team to have a chance to win this championship round.
You got Udonis Haslam.
Did you like that?
That was really good.
Nice.
I have the Lakers in six. What do you say?
Ah. You know, when I look at it from a very critical eye going into this game, I really believe that the Miami Heat have a very, very good chance of winning this series. And I don't say that blindly. Again, I'm going to reframe what I just said a little earlier. I think Spoelstra's ability to game plan is phenomenal. You got to keep in mind, not only does he know him from playing against LeBron James, he knows LeBron.
How to like game people, plan to make him most effective.
Understand this. Eric Spoelstra is the one who got LeBron James's career going. Go back into your history books. It was Eric Spoelstra that coached that Miami Heat team that won those championship games with LeBron James. So not to say that that's going to, you know, obviously create some magic kryptonite that can keep LeBron James from being LeBron James, because I think we realize that you're not going to stop him if he decides he wants to do it. But what we do know about LeBron James, historically speaking, is he is more than willing to defer taking over a game. Now, he has shown some aggression in trying to close out games in the last couple games, but it's not a given that LeBron will maintain that aggressive approach in his going into this championship round. I believe that this Miami team, they hustle very hard. They have been shooting well enough. They have this grit about them that I believe can really irritate and agitate the Lakers. So going into this series, if Miami can get into a rhythm early on and can disrupt the Lakers enough where they can't get in a rhythm and allow them to get in their half-court sets, don't allow them to set up.
Well, but that's the thing.
You're going to have to run
them. I can't
wait
to see defensively how Miami sets up.
You're going to have to run
them. You saw they frustrated the hell out of the Celtics,
yes,
shifting into the zone,
yes,
and saying, all right, try to break this, and they got out of sorts.
I think it's a very comparable group in that Boston Celtics team. Not as much talent in terms of proven talent, but great enough talent to say that sample size that you saw there could lead to them being able to have good success against the Lakers.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, here we go. This is a story. We're going to step out of sports for a minute because everybody needs a laugh, right?
All right.
World needs a laugh.
Yes.
We all need a hug,
yes,
and take a pause.
Yes.
Wherever you are, thanks for being part of our extended family.
Okay.
This is Ruby the African Gray. What? On display at the Norcutts Garden Center. Wait. Garden Center in Ashton, Greater Manchester, because I got to explain what it is. Okay? It is a foul-mouthed parrot who started cursing at customers, so they had to remove the parrot from exhibition. Because the look on your face is really what did it for me. I said, Ruby the African Gray, and you about fell out your chair. Like, what the hell is he talking about? I'm like, wait for it. There's a punchline to this. So on display as part of this garden center.
You got to be careful around them African grays, man.
But that's what they said.
It can all go
somewhere along the way.
It can all go wrong. You better get some
Jeff
African
gray parrot decided that it picked up, right, as they want to. The brain works. They picked up some words and would indiscriminately just start cursing at people. So it had to be removed from the shop floor because it kept swearing at people. No, the look on your face as I introduced it made for the pause. I wish I had video
take
of that because that
break
was fantastic.
Please take
but
us
think
to
about
break
that.
Take us to break. Please.
Why? You're too busy laughing. I just broke you.
The African gray.
Ruby the African Gray Parrot has picked up some naughty words and decided to say them repeatedly. We offer our apologies if this causes
offense.
We
apologize.
Also, please don't put your fingers around objects because he may bite.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific